stand ready to rumble.
Three
hours
is out.
Bernardo's
scooped it up. Terrence Newman running back.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session, our special Scribe Session podcast series, catching up with former Bengals from the 90s and the early 2000s. So far, you've heard from Adrian Ross, you heard from Ashley Ambrose, and now our third installment, we're catching up with former Bengals tight end, Tony McGee. Tony, thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks for having me. What's up with the name? Scrad Session?
Scrad Session.
What did you come?
We're Scribe, the lowly scribes, so we get a chance to chat about whatever we want to, so we decided to call it Scrad. It's a working title. In fact, it could be on the way out here fairly soon.
Okay, all right. Well, that's the first thing that has to go. But outside of that, it's good to hear you spoke with Adrian Ross and Ashley Ambrose, and hopefully those guys are doing well in their transition in their post-NFL lives.
They are doing great. They are doing great. Ashley now the assistant with University of Idaho, coaching the DBs. And Adrian Ross is an agent, and he's done a lot of radio and a lot of good work in the community in Sacramento.
Whoa. Adrian Ross is an agent. Who does he represent?
Well,
to be an agent, you have to have some clients. Is it a self-coined term, or does he actually have clients? Because, you know, Adrian was a huge jokester.
Let's say that. He's passed the test. He is technically an agent. Now, as far as how many clients he has, I cannot speak to that. But he's called himself an agent, so that's half the battle, right?
Hey, you know what? It's how you perceive yourself, right?
That's right. Well, I'm going to go ahead for our folks, run down in case they forgot some of the numbers from year to year. It was an 11-year NFL career. From 93 to 2001, you were with the Bengals, 150 starts, 322 receptions, 4,089 yards, 21 touchdowns. Boy, those numbers sound all right, don't they?
You know what? It would be better if you count those about five touchdowns where I got tackled on the 1 yard line. You talk about a guy that has some buzzers luck in the early 90s outside of what the team did. I mean, I had a couple stats should have been a little higher than that. But anyways, it is what it is, and you move on. And it was a great experience.
Yeah.
You know, outside of our record, everything else was a great experience.
Right. Well, you know, now maybe a more important, part of your story. Now CEO of H&M Global Logistics based out of Orlando, CEO Tony McGee. That's how we should start addressing you now. How about that?
Yeah, sounds a little too formal. I just like T. McGee. That's well enough. And it's funny, too, because, we have about 30 employees here. We have an office down in Austin, Texas. We'll be opening up in South Florida, Miami. We have a warehouse out in L.A. And it's just, I don't know, I always feel uncomfortable when people say boss. It just doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't really sit well with me. So I encourage them not to say that because, I just consider us coworkers. But yeah. I just happen to sign the check, so.
So you are the boss. You just don't want them to call you that. I hear. I gotta ask you. I mean, you as soon as you got out of football, you immediately pretty much started up this company, and it's evolved. I mean, did you always have business on the mind, even when you were in the league, about have a plan for what you wanted to do when you got out like that?
Absolutely not. It's actually kind of funny that you end up in a field that you never really imagine, and quite honestly, you don't even know how you got there. And I say that because when I finished playing, I think one of the obstacles is that people don't have enough opportunities set up for him. Well, I was at the other end of that spectrum. I had too many opportunities, and that can work against you as well. When I came out, I started H&M in 2004, but I just kind of did that as a tax shelter to house some of my real estate investments. At the time, the real estate market in Orlando was extremely robust, so I was flipping houses and selling them, having fun, you know, making good money doing it, and I thought I'd never have to do anything else. And the acronym H&M comes from Home Notes and Mortgages, but it's also the acronym for my daughter's initials, Hannah Nicole McGee. So with that said, that's how we started the company. But like I said, it really wasn't doing the things that we're doing today. Along with flipping homes, I was also doing television, some stuff for ESPN's Cold Pizza, did some stuff for CSTV, did some stuff for Fox, the Big Ten Network, and I had a radio show here in Orlando, Florida as well, a sports complex. I had way too many things going on. And what I found out is that when you have, five, six different things that you're trying to work on, you're marginal at best at all of them, and you master none of them. So it took me a little while, and I had to step back and reassess some things and really map out a course and a direction for what I wanted to do. And the first step in that process was setting some goals. So I went in and set some goals, and my first goal was to make more money in private business than I made while I was playing in the NFL. So I went back and, you know, calculated those numbers, and I'll do that pretty soon. So that was my goal. I haven't gotten there yet, but you know, because the NFL, that's every Monday for 17 weeks is your birthday during the season. And if you want to find an NFL player, just go to the mall on a Tuesday, because that's where you'll find the boys at, you know, picking up those birthday presents. So.
Right.
It was, but needless to say, just jumping back to what I'm doing now, it's fun, and you mentioned the title CEO. What I found out is that the NFL is one of the best ran corporations in the United States of America. So a lot of the things that we do in terms of culture and processes, I try to borrow as much as I can and remember as much as I can and implement those different tried and proven processes and practices into our everyday work. And some of it works like a charm, and other things and aspects, you need some tweaking. But that's given us the opportunity to be in a position that we're in now, which is a stage two company that's growing on a consistent basis.
You know, it's really interesting because we hear so many stories about guys that get out of the NFL and go broke, you know, and mm-hmm. you know, it's like you hear them every day, and the numbers are ridiculous. It's over 50%, 60-75% of former athletes end up going broke and not making money. How important was it for you to kind of try and have a plan, and how much do you talk to guys? Do you talk too much to guys in the league about the best way to go about post-football life? Because those first few years for a football player who in so many ways defines himself by being a football player and doesn't really know what else to do, those are lost years where just trying to figure it all out. I mean, how much do you help, and what's the key to that?
Well, first and foremost, I think that we have to remember that we have people that go to school and they train at the best business schools in the United States of America, higher learning institutions. They have postgraduate degrees, masters, and MBAs in business. And these guys come out and they lose money in the market, okay, and investing and in real estate and things like that. So when you look at athletes, many of us who some of us do graduate, and a lot of us don't graduate, and we haven't been exposed to the type of money, and we don't understand the financial markets, the different investment vehicles that are out there and available to us. So if you don't have that education, and guys with that education make bad decisions, how do we really expect athletes not to make bad decisions with their money? So, I mean, I think the thing first and foremost we should really, really preach to, you know, young men that are coming out making that kind of money is don't do anything. Just put it away. You know what? Yeah. Learn, you know what? Start to understand where you put your money before you start making choices and decisions. And secondly, the biggest thing that I can tell any athlete is, you know what? Don't invest with someone that doesn't have skin in the game as well. And too many times, we don't see athletes do joint ventures together. They go and do it with their brother, their friend, their cousin, or some other hanger-on that has an agenda. And I think that if athletes start working together in collaborations, we see that with the rap artists. We see that with businesses. These guys come together and they do business together, and there's shared risk and there's shared reward. But when you're the only one that has something to lose, it's usually a bad situation. So in terms of what I do, I don't really get the opportunity to get back and speak with guys, because I think the environment and the culture is closed off a little bit. I mean, I quite honestly, I can say that I haven't been invited back to do anything or be a part of it or talk to the guys. And, you know, there's been no outreach at all. And that's fine. You know, I mean, at some point I'll come to a game and buy my own ticket and take my daughter to a game just to show her where I used to play. But I think that it would be greatly appreciated if the team, you know, would reach out and put something together and invite us out. But, you know, I know some teams have alumni functions and things like that. Quite honestly, I've just never really been invited to anything or heard of anything. And, you know, so you just go on with your life.
Yeah. I've talked with that with a number of different guys too, and what it would mean to them just to have a chance to come back and have the fans, you know, give them an ovation one more time, or even just be out there with a team that did particularly well, or whatever it would be, even supporting another teammate who goes in the Ring of Honor type things like that. Mm-hmm. So many other teams do that, and the Bengals just haven't. And that's why I thought this series would be so interesting, because guys that played in the past year tend to fall off the map and be forgotten amongst the fan base just because the memory isn't brought back up very often. Is that something that would mean a lot, you think, to the guys that you know from the old teams that you were on are important to you, you think?
Well, first and foremost, let me jump back. I went to the University of Michigan, and just to build on one point that you made, and they invited us back to be a captain of the game. And when they did that, they brought us out at myself and Mark Messner. They brought us out at halftime, and you know, they announced you got to ride the team bus and do that. So, quite honestly, when they came to me and asked for a donation, I was very open to that idea because that was special, it was fun, and it did mean a lot to me. And I think that it would only be, you know, good business for the Bengals brass and their management and leadership to really look back and say, hey, you know what, we've got some guys that you know, played for us, and now they're doing some things that are positive. Let's engage these guys. I just think that's just a great way of doing business. So as to whether or not that'll happen, I don't know. Would I be open to it? I would be open to it, and it would mean a lot to me if I felt like it was sincere. And they really did, you know, want to embrace and come back. But I do know that I know guys that play with the Dolphins, and I finished up with the New York Giants in 2003-04, and I've gotten some invites to alumni functions for them. But I don't really feel like that would be kind of, you know, almost false representation for me to show up at a Giants alumni event. But, you know, so needless to say, when you spent as many years in Cincinnati as I spent, I would definitely support and be in favor of trying to put something together where you get a chance to see the guys. Because right now, the only way I keep up with most guys is just every now and again, somebody will pop in my mind for one reason or another, and I'll just look them up and see how they're doing. And like you said, sometimes I'm glad to hear that the guys that you've spoken to are doing well, because sometimes what I see when I do look guys up, it isn't what you really want to see. You want to see guys that are, you know, prospering, doing well, and you know, really making that positive transition into their post-football careers and lives.
Yeah, because the post-football transition can be a very difficult one for somebody. But let's go back to the actual football that was played. You know, you mentioned University of Michigan. Here's what's very interesting. You're a great cross-section of this decade because you were there for the good majority of it. You kind of saw it all. well, I guess except for a winning season, maybe unfortunately for you. But you were at University of Michigan, and in 1990, you finished your seventh in the AP poll. In 91, sixth in the AP poll. In 92, fifth in the final AP poll. You knew nothing but winning, and you came in your rookie year, start 0-10. How much jump are you thinking, what have I got myself into when you first showed up?
Well, you know, it was, for me, it was a process that you had to boil it down and really, really segment it and say, you know, there's only certain things I can control, and I can only control of the product that I put on the field. I can't control the overall product. So I really had, I mean, and I'll be honest, it was a tough transition for me to get to have to deal with that. But I had to start looking at it and saying, hey, what am I putting out there as my brand, and how am I representing myself? So I had to just really, really just focus on that aspect of it, because that was the only thing that I could control. And as a young player, I don't think you really have those leadership qualities and skills to really speak up and do some of the things. So I guess from that standpoint, I wish I probably had spoken up more and really challenged people and not just try to focus on the products that I was putting out there, but really engaged other people. But like I said, at the time, I didn't have just the wherewithal to step outside and be that vocal person. You know, in hindsight, if I had to do it all over again, it would definitely be different. That's why as I, you know, manage my business and try to build and develop leaderships within my ranks, I'm constantly pushing them to be vocal, but simultaneously to back it up with their actions. You know what, go early, stay late. I was telling an employee the other day, I said, you know what, I was a good player, had a nice long career, and I said, and I worked hard, but I said I didn't live a football life. And what I mean by that is I didn't go home and watch film until I fell asleep every night and watched hours and hours of film. And I felt like if I'd done those things a little bit differently, and if I had been taught that as a younger player, that could have made me better, and in turn I could have spread some of that work ethic and helped that culture permeate throughout the organization, and we could have probably been better. But I guess you can't live in ifs and buts. So it is what it is. You learn from it, and you just grow from it, and you try to move on.
Yeah, yeah. How tough of an adjustment was that, though? I mean, how long did it take you to get used to that when you've known nothing but winning? And did that wear on you, or did you get a feeling that it wore on the locker room at all?
I think what happens is, first and foremost, you never get used to it. You know what, if you're a competitor, you always want to win. You always want to go out and fight. But I think you get to the point where you start to understand that, you know what, I'm limited in what I can do to change it. So once again, that took me back to I could focus on one thing, and that was myself and making sure I put out the best product that I could put out for myself. And you just get to the point, and I know it's a team, but you have to concentrate on yourself when you can't control the other individuals. And that's kind of, that was, I believe that was my approach as I went through the process. But man, I mean, that's been 20 years ago.
20
so
years.
It's kind of hard to dial back on and really remember it. But as you say it, you know what, it starts to stoke the flame, and you know, it gets the juices flowing a little bit, and you start to say, man, what could I have done differently? So, you know,
yeah.
But people ask me and say, do you miss it? And I say, well, I missed the check. So, like I said, it's a lot harder to earn that type of money in the real world. But you get the opportunity to play a game for a living. And, you know, being in business, I'm fortunate that I can drive to work every day and look forward to the different challenges. And there hasn't been one day that I've driven in to work and thought to myself, I'm dreading it. I mean, you know, I really feel like, for the most part, I'm living the dream, in terms of just the next, you know, next phase of my life and being in my 40s. So from that standpoint, it's all good.
One thing, that Adrian Ross kind of talked about that I thought was really an interesting thing, because it's such a variation from the way the team operates today and that fans complain about today about the Bengals, is that they don't go out today. Oh, they don't make the big splashes in free agency. And one thing Adrian Ross was saying was, in that era, there was always this attempt to make a splash about the next guy who was going to come in and be the savior of the team. Mm-hmm. And for veterans, that rubbed a lot of them the wrong way and made them think, well, what am I here? I'm here producing. What are we doing? Was that a theme? Did you notice that as a theme when you were there, that it felt like it was always somebody from the outside was going to come in and save it, rather than really investing in the guys that were currently in the building?
No, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm all about continuous improvement, and I know and understand the business. And in business, I tell our employees, somebody said to me when I got to the Bengals a long time ago, and I tell our employees this all the time, we'll tolerate you until we can replace you. You know what? My thing is make yourself irreplaceable. And I think if you sit around and worry about outside factors, you know that they're out there evaluating every college player. They have a whole team of scouts to do that. Simultaneously, they have a whole team of scouts, and they have all the film on every current player. So if they have the opportunity to make an upgrade, they're going to make that upgrade. But what is it? It's incumbent upon you to put yourself in a position where you're so valuable that they can't do anything with you. And you know what? I felt like I did that for 9 years in Cincinnati. Maybe they should have done something with me earlier. Maybe I should have done something with them early. But needless to say, it is what it is, and I have no regrets because, you know what? Hey, they drafted me. They gave me an opportunity, and you know what? It kick-started my life. And you know, I come from Terre Haute, Indiana. I came from the projects. You know, it's not government housing. So I mean, I once again, I had the opportunity to play in the NFL for 11 years. The average is what, 3.5 years? Because why? Because pitching starts at 4 years. We know that. So
yeah.
You just understand that it is a it's not a career. It's a moment in time. So you have to really embrace it and maximize it, but understand, you know, put yourself in a position where you're irreplaceable.
Yeah. Well, I guess when you look back on, are there any games or moments or touchdowns or anything that stick out to you as ones that above the rest that you particularly remember and just really hold a special place?
Quite honestly, in terms of particular games and things like that, I would say more so it's just the it was more the outside moments, spending time with the guys, the camaraderie. I mean, you just had some really good guys that had an opportunity to play with, Marco Battaglia, the locker room times. Oh, those things stick out more than me, but I will say that there's no greater feeling than waking up in the morning and just knowing that you won a game. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just like you can stick your chest out, you can go outside. I keep up with the Bengals to an extent. Like I said, I have not been to a game, but, you know, I see some of the stuff that the young tight ends are doing, Eifert and Gresham. I mean, naturally, the first thing you look at him and say, man, you know, but I could do better than that. That's what all old guys do. But I don't do that. I look at those guys and say, man, they're bigger, faster, and stronger than what we were. But I can tell you what, I can still knock out about 26, 27 reps on 225. So that's probably one area I feel like I could go in there and go in the weight room and have a little fun with them. But anyway, you know what? Just looking at those guys and how to develop, I'm proud of them. And, you know, I feel like, you know what, they've got a nice tradition of tight ends there. And I like to say, hey, when I was there, I did what I could do to put out to be the best I could be. So in terms of, I missed the NFL, absolutely. But it was a moment in time. You enjoyed it. You move on. I think some people get to the point where they miss it to a point where they can't get over it. And then that definitely didn't happen to me. Like I said, you transition and you move on. And now it's almost like it's been so long that it's almost like it didn't happen. That's the best way I can describe it. You know, it's like you ate a meal that was really good, but you know what? Your taste buds don't really, you know what? They don't really taste it anymore because it's, you know, you remember it, but that's all you have is really that memory. So, like I said, I will reiterate that it would be nice to put together some different opportunities where guys can get back and just kind of touch base and reminisce a little bit. I think that would be, appreciated and hopefully well attended. So that's my one request that I'll ask of the Bengals. And, you know, I'll come, I'll buy a good seat, I'll buy the popcorn, I'll pay for the parking, but bring everybody together and, create a sense of family so guys want to come back and really, you know, provide guidance and mentoring to these guys that are playing now, because in, you know, 5 or 10 years, they'll be in our position, and you know what? Hopefully they'll pay it forward and give back as well.
Yeah. Do you ever keep up an eye on any of the numbers that some of the guys are posting, if they're passing you in the record books or
That means, I'll be honest, that means absolutely nothing to me. There's a problem if I got time to sit around and keep up on that stuff. That means I'm not taking care of the business that I need to be taking care of currently. And people that do that, really get a life, guys. Come on.
Well, I mean, you talked about it specifically, how much tight ends have changed. I mean, there's got to be a piece of you that says, man, I wish I was coming into the league at this time when the tight ends have become the hot commodity that everybody wants a piece of.
No, you know what I wish? I wish I just went ahead and taken one of those basketball scholarships, played 3 years of basketball, played 1 year of football, came out and just out-jumped everybody and scored a bunch of touchdowns like Jimmy Graham, like Antonio Gates, like all these guys are doing. I mean, I commend those guys. I'm saying, man, they were smarter than me, man. They didn't pound it around for 4 years. They just played one or two and then they hopped in the gravy train. No, I'm just kidding. I do appreciate the spread offense and the way that they're spreading tight ends out and utilizing them. And quite honestly, we started to experiment with some of that stuff back then, but we didn't take it to the level that it's taken to today. So, kudos to those guys for really, being, integral parts of the offense. And I think that I think tight ends are one of the best athletes on the field simply because you have that hybrid in terms of the versatility to get down and mix it up with the big boys in the trenches, but to have the agility to step outside and get your wiggle and shakes on and create some space and make some things happen in the passing game.
Do you still watch? You mentioned kind of keeping up a little bit. Do you still watch a lot of football, or have you?
Oh, absolutely! Every football. My daughter tell you football Sundays, man. You get the Mountain Dew, you get the pizza. I mean, we don't have La Rosa's here in Orlando, so that's a little tough on me. But you get the Mountain Dew, you get the pizza out, and I mean, I find myself watching Red Zone Channel more so than not because it's kind of hard to watch a game. But the game is strong, regionally speaking. You've got. I mean, I talked to our employees. I said, look, the NFL, look how they market. I mean, everyone, I can tell you, any person in my office can tell you probably 20 NFL players. And how many basketball players can they tell you? They can probably tell you, five.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The NFL does an excellent job of marketing. I enjoy football Sundays. I think they're diluting the product a little bit. Thursday nights, I've never watched a Thursday night game. It just doesn't resonate with me. It's not when I watch football. I like it football Sundays. And I think they've diluted Monday night a little bit too, because that used to be an event, but it's not the showcase of premier game. So, I'm a sucker for nostalgia. And if we could, take a step back and do it the old way, I'd be happy with that. But I do understand you have to, innovate and move and make progress.
Well, without doubt, you have moved on and created this great, this incredible career post-football. But when you sit down and it's January and it's a playoff game on, is there a little piece of you that just wishes you'd have gotten what that tasted like?
Hell yeah. Come on, man. I mean, take it a step further. You want that ultimate, the big enchilada, the Super Bowl and different things like that. But, I mean, I also say that, everybody wants to be, all the young kids, they want to be Mark Zuckerberg, too. You know what I mean? You can't miss what you never had. And you have to understand, and I tell my employees all the time, not everyone's going to be a millionaire. You know what? Sometimes you got to be a thousandaire, okay? There's nothing wrong with that. Just maximize your potential. I think if you take a look at it, I'd say, do I have a few regrets? Yeah, if I had known the things that I know now when I was playing, oh, man, just the mental strength and the work ethic approach, the understanding the processes, I'd be a beast. I mean, if you take this brain and put it inside a Gresham's or Eifer's body, man, some good, unbiased perspective on things, you know what, give old Tony a call because I can definitely point you in the right direction.
Well, I'm with you. I think the team needs to give guys like old Tony a call, bring them back, have them sit down, talk to some of the guys, and bring them out for a game. I think it would be great. Maybe we can get you up here for an opener or something like that. Bring up during camp when you can really talk, guys. I think that would be a great plan. I hope that if we could do one little small little bit to come out of this whole thing, maybe we can start to get that thing moving in the right direction.
Yeah, well, like I said, let me know anything that I can do. Would definitely, you know, help out and encourage and be a part of it. So, I know Tim McGee is there doing some positive things with his agents and his basketball. So, you know, you got some guys doing some positive things. That's the only other thing I would say, too, Paul, is I appreciate you reaching out and really looking at, you know, guys that are doing things on the positive side. Because too often we hear about the negatives and the guys that are falling on hardships, but we don't spend enough time really focusing and looking at the guys that are doing it the right way and trying to understand, like you said, how come they've been able to make the transition where so many of us haven't been able to make that transition and do things the right way. So anything that we can do that's, you know, moving, you know, relationships in a positive direction and engaging the team and former players, I'm all for it. I'll support it. And, you know, regardless of that, I do plan on bringing my 15-year-old daughter back and showing her, you know, the stadium and some different things like that, because the last time she was in there, she was 2. So that'll bring back some memories for her.
No doubt about it. Well, Tony, I want to thank you again for coming on the podcast. It was an absolutely a blast. You know, I should tell you, I've been giving the other guys and around here on the podcast, we're big music fans. And I like to try to give the opportunity for whoever I'm doing it with to pick a song or even a band or whoever is at the top of your iPod or somebody you like that we can play out underneath and play out the podcast for. So who you got? Who's at the top of your iPod? You got a classic that you like or something that you'd want to hear coming out of it to finish us off?
Oh, man, I'm a hip-hop head. The 90s, you know how it is. So, I wouldn't say a classic, but since you're talking about playoffs, you know, it's the NFL. Hey, just throw Drake's trophies on.
We're throwing trophies on, underneath. I appreciate it. Tony McGee, again, thank you so much for joining me. And congratulations on everything you've been able to do in your post-football career. It's fantastic. Thanks again.
Paul, stay in touch, man. Take care, buddy. A bunch of handshakes from the fakes. But nigga, I do not wanna be friends though. I tell y'all, man, this shit is not a love song. This a fucking stripper on a mink rug song. This a fucking boys forever hold a grudge song. Pop some champagne in a tub song. Nigga, just because song. Hey, what's the move? Can I tell the truth? If I was doing this for you, then I have nothing left to prove. Nah, this for me though. I'm just trying to stay alive and take care of my people. And they don't have no award for that. Trophies, trophies. And they don't have no award for that. This shit don't come with trophies. Ain't no envelopes to open. I just do it cause I'm supposed to. I go to dreams with a suitcase. I got my whole country on a new way. She like, I heard all your stay where you stay. House so big, I haven't seen them boys in 2 days. I use a walkie-talkie just to get a beverage. I saw my parents split up right after the wedding. That told my stay committed, felt the credit. Check the numbers, I'm the one who really get it. I told y'all, mom, man, this is not a love song. This is doing me and tell the truth. If I was doing this for you, then I have nothing left to prove. Nah, this for me though. I'm just trying to stay alive and take care of my people. And they don't have no award for that.